You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, and I want to give you his years, put him into context. 1888-1959. He was a Gaon Adir, basically self-taught, never attended a yeshiva. His father was Rav in Paris. His father-in-law was Rav in England, Shmuel David Hillman, Yoach Halevi Herzog with his father. He knew Kol HaTorah Kula, photographic memory, had a PhD in chemistry, dealt with Tchelet, biological chemistry, sea animals, spoke, read about 11, 12 different languages. He was chief rabbi of Ireland. Telling you he's chief rabbi of Ireland is like telling you, if I want to become a Hasidic Rebbe, I have a title, the Maplewood of the Rebbe. You can't be a Rebbe without having a title from Chutz Laretz. I was rabbi in Maplewood. I built the first Orthodox shul 7 years. No one else claims the title, Maplewood. Big deal. In Ireland, there were a few minyanim of Shemesh Shabbos Jews. He was desperate to come in Aliyah. My revered neighbor for over 40 years in the building I live in Israel, Rav Yehoshua Huttner, told me that one time a mishulach from Israel visited Rav Huttner in Dublin, and Rav Herzog said to him, find me any position in Israel, even a shamus in a shul, I want to go in Aliyah. And 2 years later, he was chief rabbi, Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Palestine. He lived very terrible years, World War II, the post-World War II era, displacement camps. Good years, but difficult, the founding of the state, the original war. And he wanted more than anyone that the state should run al pi halacha. Now, this was an impossible task. First of all, you will know that the percentage of Shemesh Shabbos Jews in Israel when the state was established was well under 15%. We need not delude ourselves. Many people didn't go on Aliyah because their Rebbeim told them not to go on Aliyah. It could have been a different situation. It's the famous story of, I still remember reading this as a kid in the Bronx, the chief of police in Kiryat Hayovel, Yerushalayim, was born in Satmar. When the Rebbe visited Israel for the first time after conquering or starting to conquer America, he went to see the Rebbe. And the Satmar Rav said to him, what would your father say to see you standing without a beard and payas? And he said to the Rebbe, if my father had not listened to you, he would be standing here with me. Mm-hmm. And the Rebbe said, Mimashach tshuva gata, no one understands exactly the answer. That was what the Rebbe answered. Nevertheless, even if they were only 15% Shemesh Shabbos, many of the Jews still had a deep understanding. No one was more removed than either one or two generations from forebears who was Shomrei Torah Mitzvah, 100%. Ben-Gurion came from a frum home. Asa Weizmann came from a frum home. Ben Tzvi was a Shemesh Shabbos. Go one by one. And they understood that for the people to remain one, you have to have chuppah v'kedushin in the hands of the rabbinate, gittin in the hands of the rabbinate. We can't have mamzerim. We can't have people saying, you I can marry, you I can't. So they made that tremendous compromise, for which, by the way, Ben-Gurion is maledicted until today by the left. And as you know, Chuppah v'Kedushin is in the hands of the rabbinate in Israel. When it came to the army, you have a real problem. I've spoken about this before in Shaarei Tefillah. Do you run one army or do you run two armies? The Palmach ran two armies. There was the religious division and the non-religious. I still had the privilege of knowing the commander of the religious division of Yerushalayim, Rav Avram Melamed, a colonel. And he came to visit me. He was in one of the big shots in Chinuch. And I was breaking in Israel, and they were hoping I would go more Israeli than I wound up extraterritorial. And took me around the corner from my house, showed me on Rehov Rav Herzog, named after Rav Herzog, the window from which Shlomo Legorenchik, no, give me his name later, Chief Rabbi Gorin, then a soldier in the religious division of the Palmach of Yerushalayim, was a sharpshooter from that window. Well, if you have two separate armies, you have no problems. We keep kosher. You capture rabbits, slaughter them, eat them. I guess no one ever died from eating a rabbit or a horse. Lo aleinu. When Ben-Gurion decided to have one army, Chief Rabbi Herzog was adamant that every religious soldier should feel at home. And from the very start, it was declared that the army has to keep Shabbat, keep Kashrut. These laws are only as good as the people on the ground. In theory, the army should be totally Kashrut, no training on Shabbat. When you have 200 soldiers at an outpost, 198 are not Kashrut keeping, believe me, there'll be no kosher. If you have a commander who doesn't know what Shabbat is about, and he demands that they train on Shabbat, you'll have a big problem. The biggest problem the army had, and this was a classic problem, and here you have to give Rav Herzog all the credit, and this problem goes back to time immemorial. Gemara in Ketuvot, Daf Tet, some of you will recognize it. Chayalei Beit David, Hayu Kolei Otzel, Milchamet Beit David. Any soldier, Hayu Koltvin Kitin Linishehem. Go to battle, you don't come back. What do you do with the women? They're Agunot. So they instituted that every soldier from Beit David left a get for his wife. This problem did not surface again until World War I, a little bit before World War I. Why? Thank you. Why? Jews were not in armies. By World War I, the Jews were liberated. Well, you can realize yourself, who here is a Kohen? Right away, the problem presents itself. You give a get to your wife, you can't remarry her. Naftali, you're a Kohen, right? So they came up with the get al tnai. It's already discussed in the 19th century. to give a get al tnai, you have to be rabbanim have to be tremendous talmidei chachamim and have to know exactly what they're doing. It couldn't work wholesale. So the tshuvah of over 100 years ago, the Divrei Malkiel, by the way, the Herzog family and the Tenenbaum family, Divrei Malkiel was Reb Malkiel Tenenbaum of Warsaw. They're interrelated. He came up with the idea that everyone should write a hasha'ah. How would we say that in English? An authorization that the beitin should give a get if nothing is heard from him a year after hostilities end. All right. Reb Chaim Moshe, the Divrei Malkiel, this is what they did. In Israel, the problem intensified 1,000 times over for two reasons. One reason is ethical, moral, spiritual feelings. You take a shtetl in Europe, 100 men fought. All right, so you had 100 hasha'at. In Israel, particularly in the War of Liberation, every last person was a soldier, including future Hasidic rabbeim. To have 800,000 hasha'at circulating is not a healthy spiritual feeling. There was a second problem, even more serious. World War I, World War II, Jews go to war. They go overseas. They don't come home again. My uncles fought. Hank Greenberg went in 41 already. Hank Greenberg grew up around the corner from my father. My father played Sandlot baseball with Henry Greenberg. If you read my seventh book, you'll see how I used to eat my grandfather's heart out going to shul every Shabbos morning because of Hank Greenberg's aunt and uncle's bridal shop. Read the book. It's not a book you just read. Study it and understand between the lines. The Torah Shabbat, the message as well. Israel, I was an active member of the IDF 15 years. I did basic training at the age of 38. I have a war ribbon from Lebanon. I'd go out to battle. A few days later, I'm back home. Israel is the very cities are a battlefront. If a man leaves an authorization and then comes home and resumes normal relations with his wife, it abolishes the authorization. Well, I gave lectures on this many years ago. Maybe it's published in the Kafet Aram Chelek Gimel. Get all the sources. Israel has very unique problems. But Rav Herzog did something. He discovered a young hotshot. We mentioned him before. Shlomo Goremchik. He got Ben-Gurion to organize a military rabbinate. Now, a military rabbinate is not a chaplaincy. In the United States, no chaplain carries a weapon. You're all aware of this. In Israel, the military rabbinate is part of the fighters. They're front line. Everyone has to carry a weapon. Everyone is trained. Everyone has to be able to shoot. I can tell you after the 82 war, the government saw that not everyone who went into Lebanon still remembered how to shoot. So they gave an order. Within 6 months, every frontline soldier had to retrain shooting. So the big day came for the rabbinate. This is a true story. I think I write it up in Washington. The big day came for the rabbinate. And we're all called up to our base in Yaffa. And the rabbinate was a very mixed crew. Guys like me, clean shaven, chassidim with long beards and payas, Panovich, Merkaz, Hezdi, Yeshivat. And we were one crew, united. And here we go down to the buses to take us to the shooting post. Who are the drivers? The finer sex, the females, feminine mystique. And they're driving us. That's nothing. We get to the shooting base. Who are the instructors? All women. And here are the chassidim on the floor. The women have to poke them and shoot them. But please come in their seats right there. Steve here, give that. He got Ben-Gurion to establish a military rabbinate. And if there ever was someone who was the right man in the right place, it was Shlomo Le-Goren. He feared no one except the Ribbono Shel Olam. When he gave a bang, he gave a bang. Stories about him are legendary and are all true. He went into Jordan, he went into Egypt, he brought back Lo Aleinu bodies. And he struggled with how do we identify. And he saw that the concept of a get will not work. And he introduced, Rav Herzog encouraged him. It became a gradual process. But today the Israeli army has absolutely no problem with agunot from battles. One of the main reasons is preventive medicine, if I can use that expression. What happens is as follows. The day you're inducted into the army, in my time it was more limited than today. Today it's much more. But in my time already, the first thing they do, any dentists here? Normie, tooth chart. No two of us have the same teeth. Even when we were born and get our early teeth. But after 80 years, with my teeth, none of these are my own. Take my word for it. My nephew just finished a few weeks ago. All right. Lo Aleinu, if you know forensic medicine, two things remain. The hair, the teeth. You can dig up from matzada, you'll still find teeth. What else do they do today? DNA. 99.99% accurate. So, today already, it's a little bit different. Everyone going to the army, immediately they can track you down. Literally, dead or alive. There's another part that the army developed, and that's the dog tag. The dog tag is extremely important, and soldiers have been court-martialed when they're not wearing their dog tag properly. I need not explain to you how important the dog tag is. Lo Aleinu, we should never have to use it. But This all goes back to Rav Herzog and Rav Gorin. They developed it. By the time I came into the army, even with all the difficulty of the Yom Kippur War, we were totally caught by surprise. There's not one aguna left. And I can still remember right after the war, there was something like 990 agunot, including many students of mine from Michlala. But ultimately, as we arranged prisoner exchanges and information with Egypt, with Syria, every case was ultimately solved. Rav Avadya Yosef deserves a lot of credit, and I lectured on this extensively. This is written up in Rekafer Aaron Chelik Gimel. That area is solved. When it came to Kashrut, it's a lingering problem. Under Rav Gorin, it became a little bit better. The reason it became better is that most of us as rabbis, and I want to thank Rabbi Sladowski and Rabbi Flaum for pinch-hitting for me yesterday, we're nice people. We're edel. I couldn't harm a fly. All my life, I've been a student of Musa. Rav Gorin was a chevraman. He was not edel. He was strong, fierce. And one time the story is told and it's documented. There was a base where there are a number of religious boys arrived. They can't eat. After Shabbos, they contacted the chief rabbinate. Sunday morning, a helicopter landed. The whole base was called to order. A major general is arriving in Aluf. He looked around. And some of you maybe did basic training. One of the rules of basic training, that the highest ranking officer present is the final word. Rav Gorin looked around. Am yesh kan od aluf? Is there another aluf here? No. Yesh kan tat aluf? No. The highest ranker was a colonel. And he thundered at them. Every last one of you will be court-martialed. If there's any problem when I come back 24 hours from now, and if I can't eat, you're going to be in jail. The colonel for 30 days and descending ranks till we get to the bottom for 7 days. He came back 24 hours later and he could eat as if he had hashkacha from the OU, the Chafkei, the Star K, and whatever you want put together. So Rav Gorin, Shtaltskeit, terrific. So with the army, life continues. And we've reached the point today where you all know the statistics. Officers training, it's on to 50% are wearing kippah. You have for the first time Haredim who are officers. In my own family, I don't want to mention how many children, how many sons-in-law, grandchildren, and soon enough great-grandchildren in the army, but I can fill up a good part of this room with direct descendants who are soldiers. Never, ever did they have a problem with Shabbat or Kashrut. If anything, you can understand why the Chiloniyim today, who are so far removed from what we said a half hour ago, parents and grandparents who knew what Yiddishkeit was, if I'd be a Chiloni, I would not allow my kid into the army. Some of these kids come in, it's the first time they meet religious Jews, and they become tzaddikim. It's not just balei tshuva. I can be a baal tshuva. Mark Licht can be a baal tshuva. We've been from all our lives. These people know nothing. They discover the blood in their veins, who they are, what they are, where they come from. It's amazing what goes on. Today we have different shilas of the army. How many of you have heard of Machon Lev? That, what do they call it today? The technological
Jerusalem
center.
College. Jerusalem College of Technology.
College, you know, but it's an academic name today. The Academic Lev Center. Am I right or wrong? Yes, there's reasons why they want to be able to give a PhD soon. Who heads up the Machon Lev Rabbinic Faculty? Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Rimon. How many of you have heard of the name? Make believe you had, so the ignorant pass for the wise. He's a giant. I had the privilege of teaching his sister. My wife was his sister's classmate in postgraduate Mechlala. He's a giant of Torah. His grandfather was a Talmud Mufak, Yosef Tzvi Rimon, Talmud Mufak of Rav Kook, a poet, a writer. Jews like this, with all due respect to the five towns, you don't have a Jew like Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon walking around here. Forgive me. What an individual. And he is a posek Mufak. And he published two volumes, I got them from my grandchildren, Halacha in the Army. And you know what shailas come up today? We have medical doctors here. It's the same shaila. You're out in battle. The battle is over. Are you allowed to come back to your base? Recognize the shaila? Reb Moshe deals with it. Soldiers asking questions like this.
You are listening to BensTorah.com.
The army's willing to let you go home for Shabbat, but the situation is tense. Yechol yad sheyachpitzo otcha b'Shabbat. They're going to call you back right after Chalon Shabbos morning. Should you go home or stay in the base? Think about it. Give you another example that you never dreamt of, even with Hatzalah. War breaks out on Shabbos, in Kippur War. Everyone is called up. Can you take your tefillin with you? Sunday morning you'll need tefillin. You won't have them. Where are you going to find them on a battlefield? Muktzah. Shaila. Rav Rimon deals with it. He's matir, of course. It's very simple. Why? A soldier has to have peace of mind. The last thing in the world he should be worried about is that he won't have tefillin tomorrow morning. Then there's another part. Could be that Meika Hadin get involved with Rishonim, that the tefillin is not muktzah on Shabbos, etc., etc. It's a different world today. The army has progressed light years, and it's all a reflection of the population. And you all know a tremendous struggle going on. Read the Israeli press, the left, the right, but the facts take place on the ground. And the statistics are obvious. Who leaves Israel? Not all Ben-Gurion's grandchildren are living in Israel. Not all, you take some of the leaders of today, the secular politicians, children all over the world. You take the religious politicians, I would say 90% of their children, grandchildren, are all in Israel. You take the Aliyah, who's coming in Aliyah? Look at Nefesh B'Nefesh. They're criticized, they're orthodox, they're not orthodox, but who's coming? 90%. Kippot. Take the French. They've revolutionized the fancy restaurants. It's well known, Herzliya Pituach, Tel Aviv. Fanciest restaurants went kosher. Glatt kosher, halak. They asked them, my high. Haaretz had a big article. They said, we want to stay in business. Who can afford to come here? The French people. And they're makpid on kashrut. Ah, you lose your weekends? They say, yeah, but we make up for it. We have britot, pijan haben during the week. The French, we're doing well. And we actually have a full day off, which we never had before. There was another area where Rav Herzog worked very hard. This is an ongoing challenge until this very moment. How many lawyers do we have here? A few. I authorize the lawyers to follow up what I'm alluding to and give lectures here to explain in detail. My dear students, what governs our life? Halacha. What is halacha? We study. Shas, Paiskim, have a shaila on Shabbos, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha. Nowadays, there are women who are trained who can handle Tarat Mishpacha Shailot, which, by the way, has increased observance for an obvious reason. Women feel more comfortable going with a delicate, intimate question to a woman than to a man. And I think it's a very healthy approach. I used to hear from the Soloveitchik family that women used to leave envelopes in the mailbox and there'd be an aid bedika wrapped in plastic or newspaper at that time, and they would contact the Rebbetzin who left it. The Rav would look at it, Paskin, and his wife would call back the person and give them the answer. That's halacha. You go into court in America, you have civil law. In Israel, when the legal system was turned over from the Turks to the British 101 years ago, British common law became the basis of justice in what later becomes the state of Israel. The judges continued. Common law ruled, civil law, non-Jewish law. A good lawyer had to prepare a brief. I always compare a brief to a sheila u'tshuva. You follow? My daughter is the first, some of you know, the first female rabbinic lawyer in history. Passed all the exams. Evin Ezra, Chashan Mishpat. Got authorization from the chief rabbinate, and she has some difficult cases, so she'll turn to me, I give her sources. She prepares a shela and tshuva, it's a brief. But that's in the rabbinic court. When she's in the general court as a secular lawyer, she has to use the generally accepted legal system. Okay. Rav Herzog had a dream that maybe we can introduce Jewish law into the legal system. And a term was coined. He didn't coin it. It was already being used in Hebrew University in the 1920s. It is called Mishpat Ivri. It's hard to explain this unless you actually study texts. But what it essentially means is it's not exactly halacha, but it's using halachic sources and attempting to frame them in a contemporary legal language. Can anyone tell me the two volumes that Rav Herzog wrote in English? Main Institutions of Jewish Law, published by Sansino Press. And these volumes aimed as giving the civil courts the ability not just to take British law, English law, Canadian precedents, but use halachic precedents, mishpat ivri. Now I have to tell you, in Choshen Mishpat, which generally is what you have in the civil courts, it is very easy to do this, even al pi halacha. Why? Because in Choshen Mishpat, those of you who have studied, those of you who are dayanim, we generally don't paskin according to the halacha. What's the key word in Choshen Mishpat?
Pshara.
Thank you. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Daf Amid Beis, Daf Zayin Amid Aleph. Pshara. Not only pshara. Kiblu Aleihem. If you have a judge who's not a big Talmud Chacham, but you agree he should be the judge, whatever he says is valid. So you see in general law, in Choshen Mishpat law, civil law, it is not as binding as in ritual law. Shabbos, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, we cannot play with. But Choshen Mishpat, as the Gemara says, more than Yikov Hadin et Tahar, we want shalom v'achdut, peace, good feeling. That can only be achieved by compromise. It's a beautiful thought. And Rav Herzog worked very hard. Has he succeeded? Somewhat. The basic problem being, in order to utilize Mishpat Ivri, you have to be learned. Until recently, till the 80s, in the Supreme Court, there were 9 justices. Only one was religious. It was called the religious seat. Like the Supreme Court here, there was one Jew for many decades, the Jewish seat. But the chinuch in Israel, it's one of the great miracles. We're at war 70 years already. We wake up in the morning, 5 o'clock, I'm listening to the news. What has happened on the borders? Don't realize the South is a full-scale war. Up north, Syria, the refugees, and with all the tension and distraction, we have raised a new generation. And the Supreme Court today, you have for the first time a woman who covers hair, wears a shaitel. She's the granddaughter of one of Rav Cook's outstanding Talmidim, Rav Arieli. She's a graduate of Choreif. You have 2-3 graduates of Alon Shvut, of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, in the Supreme Court. So a whole debate, if you read Makor Rishon, who would Rav Aaron be more proud of? His Talmidim, who are Rabbanim like Rimon, or the Supreme Court Justice David Mintz? All right, I would answer he'd be proud of both of them. Not everyone has to be a Rav, a Rosh Yeshiva. You need tzaddikim in every field possible. And Alachat Kama V'Kama, in the Supreme Court. So you see, again, it's a reflection of the population, the reflection of what's happening in Israel, the reflection of how you vote. In Israel, you go to vote, you're voting for Torah. You're voting people, the Akuta, the Hasidim, the Litvakim, the Shasnikim, and the Tzioni Dati world, and as split as we are, because every Jew considers himself a gong. This is part of being a Jew. Am kishei orevata. We all have the answers and the way to go, and we're all the inner fighting and contention and battles and magazines with pictures of women, magazines without pictures of women. Today I get wedding invitations where the woman doesn't exist. Yeah, I saw Reverend Moshe Soloveitchik got married. I saw with my own eyes the wedding invitation. Chaim Chaim Halevi v'Reyato Lifsha, I believe, was the name, Soloveitchik. Today you see Chaim Halevi Soloveitchik v'Reyato Levit Kalmanovich. Follow? No first name, but with all our inner contention and conflict, you go to vote, you have to compromise. I wrote by a Yehudi. Bennett is not entirely my cup of tea, but when I look at the overall picture, we vote, we do, we accept, and believe it or not, just a few weeks ago, the bill passed in the Knesset by majority vote that Mishpat Ivri is officially not only to be accepted, but to be encouraged in the Bate Dinim in the state of Israel. Okay. So I want to add a postscript in 1 minute. Bring you why worry about the Yankees and the Mets. Give you something to really challenge the charisma in our beings. May I reiterate, Ani Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm able to speak a little bit. The story of Rav Herzog is a majestic story, worthy of a full-length movie. A man who came from Paris, studied in London, rabbinated in Ireland, and went on to become the chief rabbi at a very difficult period in the history of our people. He was a gon adir. He worked very hard to influence the nascent state. His dream was it would be totally al pi halacha. In certain areas that was achieved, chuppah v'kedushin, kitten, personal status. The army, a battle for years, an ongoing struggle, but a reflection of the population, and certainly infinitely better than what was. Mishpat Ivri, it's not halacha, but it's covered to halacha. We're Jews. Why do we always have to be Makayim Ubir B'Steyacher, taking sources from others? We have our own. We have a wonderful minister of justice today, Shaked Ariela, am I right? What's her first name? Ayelet Shaked, a wonderful minister of justice. Very hard to know about her background. Very little is ever published about her family. There's a simple reason why. Anyone know what the reason is? Her husband is a pilot in the IDF. And for obvious reasons, you're not allowed to identify or publish about pilots. She claims she's from a non-religious background, but she identifies fully with the religious Zionist world. She was raised in North Tel Aviv, which tells you something. Those of you who think you know modern Hebrew, I'll throw a word at you that was just coined. Hitzvonit, she's a northerner. You know what that word means? It's exactly. Wealthy, five towns, back Lawrence, northerner, no religion. There it means no religion. And she's a tzvonit. And she was asked, why do you have such a deep understanding and love for religious Zionism? And she answered, the greatest girls she knew in her high school years were the girls who went to Bnei Akiva, quote, end quote. And Ayelet Shaked, my granddaughter, has a picture of herself with Ayelet Shaked when she visited her Ulpana. And Ayelet Shaked has been a big fighter for Mishpat Ivri. I want to end off in Yonah Diyoma. You all know that Reb Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog was just elected head of the Jewish Agency. This is a grandson named for his grandfather. His father was Chaim Herzog, the president. Three generations, Yitzchak Halevi spent many years in New York when his father was ambassador to the UN. Educated at Ramaz. I wish I could tell you he was a great example of a grandson of a great Rav. He's a traditional Jew. A few years ago, head of the Labor Party, was interviewed in the papers, and they asked him about his religious status and how come he drives on Shabbos, drives to synagogue, etc. And it was a very disturbing answer. I want you to know that there's just been an explosion in our world. A virtual student of mine made this available to the public a few weeks ago. Yeah, you can photograph it, take it. Take it, you can take it. Make copies for it for once. The Herzog archives were just released to the public. And both the archives of the father who we're speaking about and the son, Chaim, president of the state of Israel. By the way, Chaim himself was a musmach of Yeshivat Hebron. And if I can quote Rakefet to you, Yeshivat Hebron is the only yeshiva in the world that can't boast about its three greatest graduates. President Herzog, Professor Alon, Chief Rabbi Gorin. Okay. This letter is amazing. 1984, Rakefet was so mad he was cursing with every word he knew in Yiddish, which is the best language to maledict in. Why? Can anyone tell me why? Sitting here is my dear Talmud Norman Gold. Before Norman Gold met me, he had been a bodyguard for Meir Kahana, arrested a number of times with Reb Meir. In 1984, Meir Kahana was finally elected to the Knesset. The nohag in Israel is that to form a new government, the president meets with all the parties, and he decides who he will call upon to form the government. President Herzog met with all the parties, including Arab murderers, compatriots of Arafat, and he refused to meet with Meir Kahana. And I was furious. Many years passed by, and here's the letter. Yeshiva University, received by the president August 17th, 1984. I'll summarize the letter, and I'll end off with who signed the letter. And what a strong letter. You met with every murderer, with Arafat's people, and you refused to meet with Meir Kahana. Meir Kahana is Miksa Talmud Chacham, a bit of a Talmud Chacham. He has four children. He has tremendous Mesirat Nefesh. Adarabbah, you should meet with him, encourage him, and calm him down that he should use his Mesirat Nefesh in a positive fashion. That's one paragraph. The second paragraph, I don't want to offend you, but look who you descend from. Look who your father was, your grandparents, the Divrei Malkiah. Now that you're president, you should go out of your way to be medakdek mitzvot. Live properly, observe properly, be a shining example to the people of Israel. You would use this tremendous prestige of the office of the president to enhance the message, the success of religious Zionism. And the letter ends off, Yemaleich Hashem Mishalotav Letova V'yatzliach Leman Ha'am Ha'aretz, and all that the president is responsible for, and everything should be blessed by the Ribbono Shel Olam. I admire you. Who do you think signed the letter? Yosef Dov Ben La'aba Murray Rabbi Moshe Halevi Soloveitchik, each Boston. So let me end off. We wish the new head of the Jewish Agency, Bracha V'Hatzlacha. May he take his heritage to heart, and may this letter that surfaces now from Mori Urebi be a lodestar for him in his new position to help Klal Yisrael. Part of the reason my body is so frail is because of Vayu Torah. You don't understand. I'll explain. Many years ago, a student whose father later becomes the president of Yeshiva University said to me, Rebbe, your shurim should go online. And I didn't even know what a computer was. I had no idea online. I said, do whatever you want. That was a mistake, because I spend 2 hours a day, 6 days a week, sitting in my office and answering questions from all over the world. From Lakewood to Satmar to Square to Lubavitch to Panovich to the Merkaz Harav crowd, Australia, South Africa, England, Canada, the United States, France, etc. And you don't have to believe me, just ask my secretary, my right hand, Sherry, and she'll certify.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.